This is Jim Inkster coming today on our show. We'll talk with Dr. E. Fay Williams and Mr. Scott Wilfong, a Democrat and a Republican, a political consultant, and Mr. Wilfong, and a former congressional candidate and lawyer, and Dr. Fay Williams, who's based in Washington. Scott will be in studio, and they will confer and, of course, debate the outcome of the George Zimmerman trial. A juror has come forward saying that Mr. Zimmerman got away with murder in the death of Trayvon Martin. We'll discuss it and where we go from here in the aftermath of the most celebrated trial since the O.J. Simpson trial. Also, Stephanie Ivanovich, a young novelist who has a book that's the talk of the literary world. It's called Big Girl Panties. We'll talk with Stephanie. But first, the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, your local number. Outside our area, please call 877-217-5757. You may reach us online, inkstershow@wrkf.org. 2 weeks after the verdict in the George Zimmerman trial of not guilty, America is still captivated by this story, and the latest development is that a juror went on ABC yesterday and announced that she thought that George Zimmerman got away with murder in the death of Trayvon Martin. Kevin, let's give this a listen.
For myself, he's guilty because the evidence shows he's guilty.
He's guilty of
killing Trayvon Martin. But as the law was read to me, if you have no proof that he killed him intentionally, you can't. Fine. You can't say he's guilty.
This was the only person of color on the jury, a Hispanic woman who now says that she wanted to vote to convict but decided that the self-defense reasoning was enough that she voted with the rest, and there we are. George Zimmerman is not guilty. He hasn't been heard from in more than a week, actually about 2 weeks, And Trayvon Martin is gone at the age of 17. With us to talk about this and the aftermath and the repercussions, both here and elsewhere, are Scott Wilfong, Republican consultant based here in Baton Rouge, and Fay Williams, former congressional candidate here in Louisiana, former person who was vital in our state's discussions about matters of race and other issues for some time, now in Washington, D.C. Good morning, Dr. Fay Williams.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Doing well. Let's begin with you, Dr. Williams. What's your assessment of the most recent development regarding one juror saying that she thinks George Zimmerman got away with murder?
Well, obviously, I'm a lawyer, and I believe in the jury system. Unfortunately, the juror waited too long for this to make a difference in what she is saying. It may give some solace to say, yeah, we knew it. And I guess the best thing for people to remember is that we have a jury system. This shows even more that it's imperfect, but we have to live with jury decisions. Now, does that mean we have to say we do nothing? We can't do anything to change the decision or the verdict, but we can take action to change some things that bring about cases like the Zimmerman case, because it certainly doesn't mean that he was innocent. It just means that the jury did not find him guilty, and I think people need to remember that. So nothing was proven in terms of his being innocent.
Are you in any way surprised at the reaction as far as how the country is riveted to this story? And it appears that the overwhelming majority of white people have one opinion and the overwhelming majority of African Americans have another regarding the outcome.
I was not surprised because we have a very different history from white people. And, of course, there are many white people who are in pain just as we are. And then I heard a reporter say the day after that really there is a lot of white shame in America as a result of this, because what they did was look at the Marissa Alexander case in Jacksonville, where he was a woman who was being domestically abused. She fired into a ceiling but was given 20 years. She tried to use the Stand Your Ground law. It was not allowed for her to have it, but it was allowed for this man where there is a death of a child, and he gets away with it. So it's like, you know, one gets to use the stand your ground and one does not. And it seems that the situation where the person is allowed to, quote, defend himself in a stand your ground state just, you know, does more harm but doesn't get punished at all. And that's unfortunate. Our system is not perfect, but as I said, as a lawyer, I know that I have to deal with it, but I know that I also have to work to take advantage of what people are feeling right now to get some other things done, like get rid of the stand your ground laws in many other states. It's not just Florida.
Scott Wilfong, what's your analysis?
Well, first of all, stand your ground was never used in the George Zimmerman case. I know Faye and I will agree on that lady in Jacksonville. That is a travesty of justice that she served any time. But in that case, she did try to use stand your ground, and it was denied. In the Zimmerman case, they never attempted to use stand your ground. It was just a basic self-defense case. But I do want to make one point on the audio that you played. I guess other than the fact that it's a juror speaking out, it's newsworthy. But if you listen to what she says George Zimmerman's guilty of killing Trayvon Martin. Well, certainly he is.
She said he got away with murder, though. Murder.
But what she said was he killed Trayvon Martin. He absolutely killed Trayvon Martin. The question was, but she also said that she thought the case should never be brought to trial because there was not enough evidence to prove that there was any ill intent, that he had any other choice other than to use deadly force in this case. And again, but to get back to the self,
well,
to
she
the
also
standard,
said at one point she was leaning toward conviction.
She was, but when she said she read the law and she looked at what the law is, and you know, that's the thing. Everybody's got an opinion. Everybody wants to put their logic and their emotions and their justifications behind it. But in reality, the six people on that jury were the only ones that mattered, and they did. And I think the evidence clearly showed they made the right decision.
297-5633 is your number. Now, let's go to Ted Nugent, who's been all over the media, particularly on Fox News, the rock star who is arch conservative. He has let no holds barred, and here are his comments regarding the
corruption and the
case.
Abuse of power and the fraud is epitomized by this tail wagging the dog, and that there are black mobs across America that are guilty of the worst racism since the Klan. The blacks have bought into this lie that somehow they're oppressed. When the president is black, the attorney general is black, governors are black, senators are black, congressmen are black, mayors are black, Oprah Winfrey, the richest people in the world are black. It is a dirty lie.
Now, Ted Nugent, Faye Williams, he's really out there, but unfortunately, I think he probably speaks for more than a few people.
Yeah, I think that is the kind of radical, untrue. First of all, I don't know where he's finding the black senators in the U.S. Senate, if that's what he's talking about. But nevertheless, it's that kind of talk, and that's what I'm trying to avoid when I talk with people, is not to rally them to do crazy things or to put Zimmerman or his family down or anyone, but rather to talk about what can we do from here on to try to make our system more just. I don't think that there's anyone who would say, as Mr. Wilfong said, that the case in Marissa Alexander was a just case, and we're still working on that. So what we're doing is switching to trying to change the law to make it equal. And he is right. Stand your ground was not used in the Zimmerman case, but in fact the jury admits that they did discuss stand your ground. They believed it was used because they knew the Florida law on stand your ground. Also, it was mentioned during the trial, but that is not what the defense argued. But certainly this jury heard the word stand your ground, and it's not much difference from the self-defense argument when it just says you don't have any, you don't have to retreat. I think that's wrong. When you have an opportunity to retreat, I don't care who it is, whether the person is black, white, or otherwise, I think they should retreat. We shouldn't value life so little that we think that murder is the first option or shooting is the first option.
Where was the option to retreat when Trayvon Martin was on top of George Zimmerman? Was he supposed to go back down through the ground and tunnel out from underneath? Because all the evidence, direct witness testimony, even the prosecution admitted at the end that, well, yeah, maybe Trayvon Martin might have been on top. I don't think that was ever argued. George Zimmerman had no option to retreat. take away the fact that under Florida law, he had no duty to retreat, which was never
George
used.
Zimmerman,
that argument was never used.
I'm sorry. George Zimmerman was a neighborhood watchman. Watch is the key word here. His responsibility was just to watch and to report, but he went beyond that. And when he went beyond that, he was looking for the fight. So
but
I don't think that he could claim that he was innocent in it. He went looking for the fight, and there was no – Trayvon is dead. He wasn't there to say whether he was on top or on the bottom, and I don't think it matters in the end. What matters is a grown man took out a gun and shot a child who was doing absolutely nothing, and I think that's why so many people are enraged over this fact, because Trayvon is not here to speak for himself. There was some evidence that, you know, that George Zimmerman was on top, but it doesn't even matter. What matters is that George Zimmerman killed Trayvon when he didn't have to, because he didn't have to follow him and should not have followed him.
The only person that committed a crime in this interaction was Trayvon Martin. Let's tell the story from a different perspective with the same facts. A 17-year-old who'd been suspended for school and was high on marijuana.
Wait a minute.
Okay, we'll take out that. He was high on marijuana. That was.
He had marijuana in his system. That doesn't mean he was high.
Okay, he had marijuana in his system. He was on drugs. He confronted a man in a dark alley
Skittles,
in a neighborhood.
Skittles, Scott.
What does the Skittles have to do with it?
He didn't have a weapon.
But he assaulted a man.
He was,
so between George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin,
he was smaller
Martin,
than the other guy, and the older guy, the other
he
guy's
was six
older.
Foot one. George Zimmerman was 5'7".
Zimmerman weighs more.
He weighs more, but Trayvon Martin was a football player. George Zimmerman was an out-of-shape guy like me. Two men met in a dark alley. One was 17 years old and committed a crime. He assaulted a man, held him down, told him he was going to kill him. George, at what point
does
George...
How do you know that?
Witness testimony.
All right, 297-5633 is your number. What did you think of Ted Nugent's remarks, Scott?
I think Ted goes way too far, and I think that, again, he's trying to inject race into something that this case never was about race at all. Even the prosecution said that race had no factor in this, and yet we've made this discussion about race somehow.
Was it about race?
We had over 100 peaceful rallies around the country, not to motivate people to do anything negative, but to motivate people to do what is right, to make changes. That's what our system allows us to do. We're not the ones who've been violent, who have, pulled guns or even advocated pulling guns on people or following people and looking for a fight. We're saying, let's work to change the laws. We have a group of very peaceful students who are sitting in at the governor's office simply to be able to talk about changing the law. We haven't heard of any violence on the part of African Americans to try to make the changes. We have a history of trying to make changes peacefully, and that's what all of us are advocating now.
But what law would be changed in the Zimmerman case that would have prevented this? Because there's a fundamental right under just basic, it goes back thousands of years, of self-defense. When you're confronted with someone who is assaulting you, you have a right to defend yourself. So I don't know what law could be changed that would have prevented George Zimmerman from using his right to deadly force to
stop the assault. Some of us, Scott, recall a time when one Fox McKithen assaulted you.
Well, that
did
was,
you have the that, right to pull out a gun and shoot the Secretary of State
certainly
to death?
Not. Certainly
why not? Why weren't you able
because
to stand
had,
your ground?
Because I had an opportunity to retreat, and there was no stand your ground law in Louisiana at that time.
Well, let's say if there had been a stand-your-ground law, couldn't you have shot Fox McKithen to death right there in the LSU union?
No, you can't, because it's the analogy, you know,
trainers. He's bigger than you are.
The best analogy I've heard is imagine a black belt in karate standing on the other side of a chain-link fence that's 20 feet high and 100 feet long, and he says, I'm going to kill you, and you've got a gun on you. Do you have a right to shoot him? Certainly not, because even though he could assault you and possibly kill you, he has no ability to do so. He's prevented from doing so. There's all sorts of exercises you can do like that to engage and analyze who has the right to use deadly force. And in the Zimmerman case, there's no question.
Right.
Martin was on top. He had every right to do it.
Well, how he was on top is the story, because he obviously was provoked. He was followed. He was, I would think if somebody were following you in your neighborhood, you would wonder what the heck's going on.
Well, Jim, if I follow you when you leave here today and I stay behind you and I walk behind you down the sidewalk and you get pretty ticked off about it and you tell me to leave and I say, hey, I'm sorry, I have every right to be behind you.
We'll
you don't have a right to shoot me.
We'll be back in 90 seconds with Scott and Faye. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher is producing. Faye Williams, lawyer, activist, congressional candidate, pride of Alexandria, Louisiana, and Scott Wilfong, man who spent quality time in Ruston, now is in Baton Rouge, graduate of the University of Illinois, by the way. And he is a Republican consultant, and they have viewpoints which are quite different, but in many ways are consistent with views around the country between whites and blacks. Of course, this isn't a universal thing. Regarding the outcome of the George Zimmerman trial, and a juror yesterday announced that she thought George Zimmerman, quote, got away with murder. Let's be quick with our callers, starting with Charles on North Foster. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Jim. My question is this. After I learned of the jury makeup and realized that there wasn't an African-American on this, I already knew what the verdict was going to be. I wanted to know if your guests will compare what happened to Trayvon with Emmett Till, because in my mind, it's plain and simple lynching. And as a black man and a 17-year-old Marine who served my country, I will not allow my child to be sacrificed on the altar of racism via lynching. I'll hang up and listen.
Well, I don't recall that Emmett Till ever threw a punch or threatened to kill anybody. He was brutally killed because he, you know, expressed admiration for a white woman, I believe is the story, right? He whistled at her or something like that. So to compare those two is really dishonoring Mr. Till's memory, who was truly an innocent individual. Trayvon Martin, on the other hand, was a criminal who started a fight.
Criminal?
Assault. I believe assault is a crime.
Well, then Fox McKithen, in your estimation, was a criminal.
You know, never convicted.
He was not charged or convicted.
Neither was, yeah. Yeah. So, in your mind, Fox McKithen should have been in jail. Trayvon Martin should have been in jail.
I don't think you can compare the two. I think
why not?
Because there was the circumstances are quite different. And you also presume that George Zimmerman had an intent to fight when he confronted Trayvon Martin. Again, nothing he ever did, nothing George Zimmerman did was against the law in terms
Mr.
of following.
Wilfong, let me ask you this. Let's say this was your daughter. Let's replace your daughter with Trayvon Martin. She sees a man following her. She starts to run. The man continues to follow her. She finally stops, confronts him, saying, why are you following me? Picks up a piece of iron, hits him in the head. It turns out he is a child molester. What would you do? Would your daughter then be guilty of murder, or would she be guilty of defending herself?
Why would, first of all, who says George Zimmerman's a child molester?
Well, there are allegations from his cousin that he is.
Was he convicted, yeah, though?
No,
Trayvon wasn't a criminal because he wasn't convicted.
You said he was a criminal. I'm not saying George Zimmerman's
a
criminal.
Direct witness testimony is Trayvon Martin was assaulting George Zimmerman. That is a crime under any statute. Now,
it depends on what the jury decides. If he was provoked, if he didn't throw the first punch, all those things are mitigating factors.
And I think what we just saw here was six ladies who came together, looked at the evidence, and said, you know what? There was no choice. He had every right to use deadly force to stop this assault, and he did. Of course, you're not going to charge a deceased individual with a crime. That would be absurd. But the question was he provoked to the extent where he felt he had no other choice? And these six ladies felt that he was.
Why do you think Mr. Zimmerman left his car when he was specifically told that they didn't need him to do that? Because the job of a watchman is not to run someone down and shoot them. Why do you think he left his car? What do you think his intent was when he left his car?
It doesn't matter what I think his intent was.
You're absolutely right. He had every right to do it.
That's
why the nation has to move on to make changes from laws that give someone the right to think that they can kill someone, they can murder someone, and get away with it, because that state's law says you have the right to stand your ground and no right to retreat. That's wrong. It encourages murder. It encourages situations like the Zimmerman case. And that's why African-Americans are in pain, because we have seen this happen too many times. when Melissa Alexander gets out of jail, then I would begin to believe that Florida is trying to do the right thing.
But you're mixing the facts. All right. There's no fair. Stand your ground.
A few folks have been waiting, and we'll try to get to as many of you as you can. Please be brief. Joe on Perkins. Hi, Joe. You're on with Dr. Williams.
Hi, Jim. Thank you. One of the good things about the Trayvon Martin case is that there will be less black people who will be killed for people like Scott to justify. Obviously, Scott comes from a Jim Crow background, and his comments are understandable, and that is unfortunate because he does not represent most people in America. That's a good news. Let me ask Pop. Despite his racist views, if Trayvon Martin were his son, would he be speaking or saying things he's saying now?
If Trayvon were your son, would you feel the same way?
I mean, of course. There's no. Would I have an emotional connection to Trayvon Martin? Certainly. If he's my son, that's a different relationship. Would it change the facts of the case? No. Tragically, you know, I've had family members who made poor decisions, who drank too much, wound up in an accident that killed them. Do I feel loss? Of course. Do I feel like there was some law that should be changed to have prevented that? No, they made a poor decision and it cost them everything. And I think that's what you have here. You know, to ask, would you feel differently if someone were your son? Well, of course you would. It's your own child. Does it change the facts, though? No, it does not.
Well, would it have been better if Trayvon Martin, Scott, had been exercising his Second Amendment rights and carrying a weapon?
Well, he wasn't of age to do so, but what would have been better is if Trayvon Martin might would have said, you know what, I'm staying with my dad at his house right over here. I'm going home. Leave me alone. I think that would have been a better response than you're going to die tonight and I'm going to jump on top of you and beat you to death.
Well, we don't know. He might have said that.
I don't think there was never any indication of that in the
witness testimony. Well, Trayvon's not around to testify as to what he said or didn't say.
That is correct.
There was also never any evidence that Mr. Zimmerman identified himself to Trayvon. And if I were Trayvon, I would never have told some strange person following me where I live.
Nicholas on South Sherwood. Hi, Nicholas. You're on with Dr. Williams and Scott Wilfong.
Well, thank you, Jim. The case seemed to be about race. I mean, if it were a black-on-black crime, it would have been on page 9B, the Metro section under the DWI section. But why doesn't the black community get out and protest black-on-black crime, which is far more prevalent?
Faye?
Actually, we do. The president and first lady even went to Chicago. They've gone to other places. They've sat down. They've talked with young people about murder. I think we work every day. My organization works every day with young men to try to give them options so that they don't get into trouble. So, I mean, don't suggest that just because you don't know everything we do, that we're not doing anything. You hear preachers every Sunday in the pulpit talking about ways to give young people options. Even the president the other day said that we need to give young black men options, first of all, like putting them to work so that they don't have this time to be on the street getting into mischief. So we are trying, and because we haven't been able to resolve everything in our community doesn't mean that someone from another community has the right to kill our children. Look at the case of Jordan Davis down in Jacksonville, Florida. I wonder if you feel the same way, where this man drove up young teenagers minding their business. He shoots into their car and kills one.
Right.
It's like it's open season on young black men.
And I think you just made the point, though. Why aren't the leaders of the black community down there talking about those cases where there's clear factual support for, you know, investigating this and righting a wrong? The Zimmerman case.
Have been, and I'll be going there tomorrow.
Well, I'm glad to hear.
I've been there too. Who've talked about it?
Dave writes, the Stand Your Ground law was included in the instructions to the jury as part of the law. And as I recall, Dave writes, one group of three jurors said that it was an important part in coming to their decision.
Exactly.
I haven't seen but I won't argue.
All right. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on with Scott and Faye.
Good morning, Jim. Let's call this what it is. It's to make my day law for the NRA and the gun manufacturers. The ALEC organization, which helps to write bills and state legislatures, says that they encourage politicians to put these stand your ground laws into effect so they can sell more guns. I mean, that's basically where a lot of that originated.
Scott?
We don't need those laws. We have the number one gun salesman in the world, Barack Obama, selling them for us with his threats to take them away. So, no, the NRA does not count on these types of laws. What they do is support laws that allow citizens to defend themselves, which is, I think, a fundamental human right, not just a American right.
Okay.
Well, I think what we do for organizations like ALEC, and I'm sorry, Mr. Wilfong, is being so negative about the president. The president certainly isn't trying to take anyone's gun. He's trying to have people have responsible use of guns. And I think that was shown in when the 20 children were killed, you know, in Pennsylvania. I think we need to stop exaggerating on guns. No one, you know, if no one had a gun, then perhaps no one would ever shoot anybody. It makes sense. But if people need guns in their homes to protect themselves, that's fine. But do you have to walk out on the street and be, you know, have it give you all kinds of energy and bravado because you have a gun? I think not. I think we need to begin to lower our temperature, begin to work together and talk about how we can prevent gun violence and all other violence and how we can help young people, you know, lift their horizons and have something to want to live for. It's a crime in our country when young people don't value life, and that's whether it's black or white.
Well, Judy on I-10. Judy, good morning. You're on with Scott and Faye. Hi, Judy.
Good morning. Just a short comment. Having lived in Detroit, Michigan for several years when it was the murder capital, the bottom line is that, yes, within the black community, we do need to get about the business of reassuring that our children don't wind up crime statistics. But let's just call it factually about the NRA. The bottom line is the Second Amendment, if you look at the historical context, was actually written because there was a fear of Britain coming back and trying to take over the colonies, as well as a fear of Indian insurrections and slave revolts.
Scott?
You know, that's some good talking points there. But, you know, I think the federal judge in Illinois said it best when he ruled recently that Illinois was not lawful in not allowing concealed carry. He said that a resident of Chicago is much more likely to have need of his Second Amendment rights walking down the block than he is in his 25th floor apartment. And in doing so, he ordered the Illinois legislature to provide for concealed carry, and thankfully that happened just a few weeks ago. So I think that's what you have to look at. What did the Founding Fathers intend? I don't think they meant for us to only be able to defend ourselves when our doors are locked and our lights are off.
Lynn and Melrose.
Let me ask you, Mr. Wilfong, in our country, it seems that most of the men...
All right, hold on just a second. Faye, would you finish, and then we'll get to Lynn. I'm sorry. Go ahead, okay. Dr. Williams.
Okay, so I was going to say that most of the mass murders in our country have not been committed by young black men. They've been committed by white men walking into theaters, shooting at a congresswoman, killing the children, you know, in Pennsylvania. There's just so much that has gone on. I mean, if we want to just talk about blaming people rather than talking about the solutions, we can find a whole bunch of examples where white men should not be allowed to carry guns because many of them are prone to mass murders.
And that's my whole point, is that we shouldn't be talking about white men had a mass shooting or a white man or a black man. It's
violence. But you just talked about young black men in Chicago killing each other.
I didn't say anything about black men. The caller may have mentioned black men. I'm talking about a Chicago resident who needs to exercise his self-defense rights and his Second Amendment rights is much more likely to have need of that walking down the street than he is in his 25th floor apartment. I had said nothing about a black individual or a white individual. I'm talking about an American.
Lynn and Melrose. Hi, Lynn. You're on with Dr. Williams and with Mr.
Wilkins. Yes. Good morning, Dr. Williams and Mr. Wilfong. I think the prosecution was derelict in allowing the whole marijuana thing to come in. Mr. Wilfong implied that Trayvon was high on marijuana and therefore violent. I've never heard a case. Dr. Williams, you may want to comment. I've never heard anyone commit a violent crime on marijuana.
Right. I'm not a doctor, but I know that people who are on marijuana tend to be subdued rather than violent. That is my experience and my understanding.
Is that your experience with marijuana, Scott?
I have no experience with marijuana, but I will say one thing. The caller was right on one aspect and wrong on another. The prosecution was derelict. That was quite a poor performance. You know, I don't think they could have gotten a conviction in any count. But the way they presented that evidence, you know, I think they have a malpractice case on their hands. However, the marijuana evidence, they did fight to allow it to be admitted, but the defense never submitted it to the jury. The jury never heard that evidence.
Right.
So it had nothing to do with the outcome of the verdict.
Right, well.
But, of course, it helps to get all of the negative feelings we're getting. But I still, Mr. Wilfong, hope that we will get beyond criticizing the prosecution, criticizing the defense, criticizing Trayvon Martin, criticizing whomever, and move toward what can we do to avoid these things in the future. That's what we're concentrating on in the African-American community and many of our white friends and friends of other races and cultures. But I don't like our continuing to just blame Trayvon Martin. Let's look at what his mom and his father are doing. They're being very, very good at not trying to create any riots or revolts or anything, but rather they're trying to move on. They're trying to do positive things. They've set up a foundation in their son's name to try to help other young black men, you know, avoid situations like the one that killed their son. You know, all of us are trying to do positive things. So I don't understand the Nugents and those who continue to be negative toward us. We're not the perpetrators here of anything, the killing or the murder, whichever you want to call it.
I think you're exactly right on the avoidance. You know, the parents need to be training their children not to engage in these fight clubs, which there's indication that Martin was involved in that. Some of the text messages that weren't admitted at the trial said he was sore from being in a fight the day before. It's obvious that he had a like for this, and I'm not even faulting Trayvon Martin, because that's quite common in the teenage young people community, is they like this kind of aggressive, violent behavior. Well, you know what? It can lead to things like this. And, you know, I heard George Zimmerman's lawyer ask the question, does George Zimmerman wish he'd never gotten out of his car? He said, of course he does. We all wish that we could have avoided tragic situations.
All right, well, we see Ted James was on this show, the state representative, last week, and he said he may be filing legislation to do away with Stand Your Ground in Louisiana. Will we see reception for that kind of bill? What do you think, Scott?
I think you might see 3 votes on the Criminal Justice Committee in favor of it, but that's about as far as it'll get because, as we've talked about before on this show, 80-something percent of the voters in this state 2 years ago approved the constitutional amendment, giving us the strongest Second Amendment rights in the nation. So there's not an atmosphere for that in Louisiana. I suspect there's not one in Florida. You know, other states. That's the great thing about our country and states' rights, is that states can make those decisions.
I think in the civil rights movement, we had to use economics to make a lot of the changes. And what I have done over the past couple of years is drop my business, and many of my friends have, with companies that are supporting those Stand Your Ground laws, that are supporting ALEC, or the American Legislative Exchange Council. I've dropped State Farm Insurance because they were paying dues there. I've dropped Bank of America. We're dropping many of the companies, and I think economics begins to hurt. I think people, you know how to stop drinking Florida orange juice, stop taking their kids to Florida to see a rat instead of, you know, going to places to teach their children something.
Scott, you're laughing.
Well, having just gotten back from Disney World, one of the happiest and most liberal places on earth, I can tell you that I don't think parents are going to stop taking their kids to Disney World because of a law that seemingly had some play in the Zimmerman case, but in reality did not. So,
all right, 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, 877-217-5757. We'll spend a few more minutes with Scott and with Faye, and we will return after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Dr. E. Faye Williams and Mr. Scott Wilfong on different sides of the George Zimmerman verdict, and Robert and Gonzalez. Hi, Robert. You're on the air with Mr. Wilfong and Dr. Williams.
Thank you very much. I have a question in regards to the Stand Your Ground issues that's so highly spoke about. And the question is this. For instance, I have an individual that's walking on the edge of the road legally, you know, and it's all being caught on camera by chance there. And the camera catches a car going straight down the road. They see this individual, and then the car starts veering toward this individual. the individual then has a right to shoot the driver?
If that's an absurd scenario there, but no, the idea is that in the face of attack, you have no duty to retreat. That's the idea behind a stand your ground law. In the face of violent confrontation, mm-hmm. not an accident where a car skids off the road, not where somebody falls down and trips into you. That's what the courts have ruled over and over again, is that there's a clear line that is crossed when you have the right to use deadly force. And that went before Stand Your Ground. Mm-hmm. The only reason that we have Stand Your Ground is to codify in our laws that you don't have to run away when a group of thugs comes up to you, your wife, and your two children.
Faye?
Well, you know, first of all, I resent the constant use of thug. There was every young black man who is killed or who gets into some kind of trouble or has a problem is not a thug. We don't use that word. We didn't even use that word for the young man who killed all of the children, the 20 children. I mean, it's just thug is just a highly charged word that seems to be reserved for young black men. It isn't so. There are many young black men. Let's look at the young black man last week who got on his bicycle, ran down a man, and rescued a child who had been kidnapped. We need to begin to give credit to young people for doing good things and not constantly referring to them as thugs.
And we need to stop race baiting, because no one mentioned anything about a black individual. You're the one who took my term thug and applied it to a black person. I think that's quite racist
right.
on your part, Ms.
Right.
Williams.
For Reggie and Lafayette. Reggie, you're on with Dr. Williams and Mr. Will Fong.
Good morning, Jim. What I want to say real quick is that I'm listening to the guy on the panel, and he's talking about the black leaders need to go into black communities and talk about the black-on-black crime. But as far as I know, the media doesn't enjoy covering a black-on-black crime like they do a racist crime. And my thing is, instead of just talking about what the black leaders need to do in their neighborhood, I think that he needs to go into the neighborhoods, because there's nothing wrong with a white man going in a black neighborhood trying to stop the black-on-black violence.
Yeah, I don't think he was talking about me. I think he was talking about the caller earlier, but I think that's a good point. I don't think that it needs to be reserved for the black leaders to try to, you know, take this upon themselves. I do think it'll be better received coming from the leaders in the community. But, you know, certainly I think we all have an obligation to that.
You know, I never hear anyone use the term white-on-white crime. My friend Dick Gregory always says people kill where they live. You know, so there's no such thing as just black-on-black crime. I mean, if you are black and you get mad with somebody in your neighborhood, you're not going to go to China mm-hmm. to kill a Chinese person. You're not going to go into the white community even to kill a white person. You kill where you live as a rule. Sure, there's some exceptions, but there's no one ever says white-on-white crime, yet more white people have killed more people than black people have.
That's... If you're talking about Mr. Gregory from NBC News, that's an interesting comparison there. But I think that
Dick Gregory, the activist, not David.
Oh, Dick Gregory. I apologize. But, I think that it's the idea that you have violence in your community and the leaders don't want to do anything about it. They want to fly to Sanford, Florida, and try to take on a case that was clear on its face that should have never been brought. Even the one juror who says that he was guilty of murder said the case should have never been brought. Where's Al Sharpton and where's Jesse Jackson and all these race baiters that want to go, why aren't they trying to solve the problems in their communities mm-hmm. instead of flying all over the country? The answer is because the money isn't there.
All right. Well, Scott, have you ever been in a fist fight other than with Fox McKithen?
Yes, I have.
Well, I've been in fist fights, and I've been hurt a lot worse than George Zimmerman was, and I've hurt other people a lot worse than George Zimmerman was, and thank God nobody had a gun.
Mm-hmm. Was anybody ever on top of you punching your head into the concrete?
Of course. When I was a kid, sure.
When you were a kid, okay.
When I was a kid, he was a kid.
Okay.
Trayvon Martin was a kid. When I was 17, you bet.
At 17, he would be charged as an adult in any state in this country with a crime.
But I mean, I'm telling you, men, and when they get in these altercations, they should settle them with their fists, not with guns.
Well, that's easy to say until you're there.
Thank God you didn't have a gun when Fox McKithen assaulted you.
None of us can substitute our mindset for what we're thinking when we're on the ground and our heads being jammed between a fist and a piece of concrete. Only George Zimmerman could make that decision.
Put yourself in the situation, Mr. Wilfong. He inserted himself in a situation he should never have inserted himself in.
Which was not a crime.
All right. Henry in Glen Oaks, you'll be our final caller. Henry, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing? I think it would have been avoided because when he was on the phone with the 911, they told him not to pursue it, and he did it anyways. So what you say about that, it wouldn't have never happened, right?
Well, first of all, he had no duty to obey the orders of a 911 operator. That's not a law enforcement official. Two, there's evidence that he did not continue pursuing him. In fact, there's evidence to the contrary. He was out of his car, but there's no evidence that he was actively pursuing Trayvon Martin.
Faye, you get the final word. Dr. Williams.
Well, let me just say, as President Lyndon Johnson once said, life is so fragile, it's incredible that we could hate and destroy one another so easily. I hope that we'll come to a day where that changes in America, and whether it's black or white, Asian, Latino, whatever, that we begin to respect each other and to care enough about life to try to avoid murdering or taking the life of someone.
Thank you, Dr. Williams. Thank you, Mr. Wilfong.
Thank you.
Appreciate your comments. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. We move to a somewhat lighter topic. Stephanie Ivanovich, who has a book that is the talk of America. It's called Big Girl Panties. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well, and let's get this out of the way. Recently, our governor, Bobby Jindal, wrote an essay to Politico in which he urged his fellow Republicans to, quote, put on their big boy pants. And I thought he might have been inspired by your book.
Well, I don't know that I can take credit for that, but it looks like the big boy pants and big girl pants are running wild.
Well, you write a book about a lady who has a love, and she is a woman who is, a full-size lady. And she falls in love with a real hunk. What happens to Hollywood?
Well, they get, they're seated together. They're both tossed out of first class, and they're seated together in coach on a flight from Toronto to Newark. And he made a first impression that he ended up feeling bad about. So he offers, being that he's a personal trainer, to get her into shape. She's just in a quagmire in her life, decides to make one positive change, and we've got a book.
And you've got a book. And you enjoy.
But he's the one who really fell hard. She was all right.
You're a Jersey girl.
I am, born and raised.
And Jersey girls have kind of an attitude.
Is there a lot of Holly? Is that what they call it?
Yeah. Is there a lot of Holly Brennan in you?
Yeah, there actually is. At least her thought patterns and the way she starts to view the world. Yeah, yeah.
So Holly Brennan is a big girl. What happens when she falls for a guy who's really a hunk who's in good shape? Does she try to slim down, or does she stay the way she is?
You know what? You work with a personal trainer. I've actually been working with personal trainers on and off for about 11 years. And, you get someone kicking your butt several times a week, your body has got no choice but to respond to that. It was really more about getting healthy than it was about getting thin. I don't think the two are synonymous anymore, and I think that's a misconception that if I was able to portray that to somebody, I consider that a bonus.
Well, you have gotten much attention, as I stated, for this book from HarperCollins, and you have been quite open, Stephanie, in saying that the thing that gave you the most fun when you were writing the book is writing about the intimate experiences of Miss Brennan.
Yeah, well, they don't call me a romance writer for nothing. That is my favorite point. That's what I used to read, and so it seemed like a natural flow for me.
Mm-hmm. Why is it your favorite part?
Because I think romance in and of itself is just so uplifting. As you start in the beginning before you really get to know each other, and then it turns into real love, or it doesn't. But in that beginning, and as you're learning about each other, I just find that so magical in general.
Mm-hmm. Well, Stephanie Ivanovich is gaining a lot of attention for her book about Holly Brennan, Big Girl Panties. And as I referred in the open, the title is almost irresistible.
I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do love it. I have to admit, I raised sons, so it wasn't really a term that we threw around a lot in my house because boys just wouldn't get it. Mm-hmm. We were more like the rub some dirt on it, but that didn't make for a good romance title. So my agents kind of suggested this one, and I will admit it still makes me giggle.
Well, you, I'm sure, follow the news, and today in this community and elsewhere, if you go to coffee shops or breakfast places, there's a lot of buzz about Mr. Anthony Weiner, the former congressman running for mayor of New York City. Doesn't look like he's his campaign is gaining a lot of momentum at this point.
No, and if you know, yeah, the jokes, like being that I'm in Jersey, all my television and news radio feeds are usually New York based, so the punchlines are endless. I could go off for about 5 minutes with you, but I don't know if that would get you like in trouble with the peeps.
it might, but his alter ego, Carlos Danger.
Yeah.
That's almost as irresistible as Big Girl Panties.
Hated the truth.
As David Letterman said the other night, I pray that this man gets elected.
Yeah. You said they had the L in there? That he gets elected?
Well, yeah. Oh, there you go. There you go. Well, his campaign is not doing well, but what about what he put his poor wife through? Put her through with what he's been doing, and now is making her, or not, he's not making her. I'm sure he requested, and she probably reluctantly agreed to come to the podium with him and defend a man who is probably not worth defending.
That's a really strong woman, I think. And you know what? I'm 50 years old. I try not to, you know, cast my own opinions onto other people. You know, if that's her choice, I support her in it. You know, nobody knows what goes on in a marriage. And if that's what she wants to do, whether for political purposes or maybe that's how she truly feels, you know, maybe he's a great dad.
Well, maybe
she
he
can
is.
Put up with the rest of it. I don't know if that's for me. But it sort of was very Clinton-esque of, you know, Hillary Clinton standing by her man.
But she had some distance there for a while, and it appears that Mr. Weiner's been engaging in this kind of conduct very recently.
And for a long time.
And he was running first. After having resigned from Congress in disgrace. You know, you may know of David Vitter, U.S. Senator from Louisiana, who was immersed in a prostitution scandal and then was reelected with a landslide. I think maybe he has emboldened a lot of people who have these kinds of issues to go forward and see what happens.
Yeah, well, if he wants to try to run the campaign, I mean, I'm interested to see how it plays out. Of course, up here, all the media is saying that he should pull out of the election.
Well, maybe.
I'm sorry, that's funny. I know.
I'll let you laugh and I'll laugh later. But
okay, I'm sorry. But we're trying to be professional here. I'm sorry.
But I think that if something like this were happening in Louisiana, people would say, "There goes Louisiana." They might even say that about "There goes New Jersey again." But New York City, I thought that was the most sophisticated city in the world.
Yeah, well, as of this morning, I think he is really dropping in the polls, I think was the scuttlebutt I got for the few minutes that I watched.
Well, speaking of big girl panties, you have a governor who is a large man who is running first in the polls for the Republican nomination for president. Is Chris Christie the next president?
You know what? I'm a registered Democrat, and I have to say I think I would vote for him. I would be first to vote for him. And you know what? My husband is a union guy. And, you know, Chris Christie is notorious for being tough on the unions. And I don't know. He slowly, you know, it was after Hurricane Sandy that a lot of us who might have
been giving him a hard time became a little more on his side, because he really stepped up and he really kind of made us feel like we were going to get through this and we were going to move forward, because just so much of the Jersey, so much of New Jersey in general was really devastated. I know the shore gets a lot of attention because that's where most of our tourism is, certainly in the summer. But the whole state really, really took a hit. And he really stepped up. And
but he got a
lot
of
heat. He's very charismatic. He's a rock star.
He got a lot of heat for making nice to the president.
You know, and again, I think that's a sad commentary, because you know what? The only time anything ever really gets done is when everyone works together. And I applaud him for, you know, befriending our president. I think that that's the true definition of teamwork.
Well, Stephanie Ivanovich has a way with words, and it's on full display in all its glory in Big Girl Panties, the story of Holly Brennan, a 32-year-old widower or widow who finds love with a man who is in good shape, and she is, of course, a woman who is full-sized. And thank you very much, Stephanie, and congrats on your great success.
Jim, thank you so much, and it's been a pleasure.
We'll be back Monday. Until then, for Kevin, I'm Jim. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.